and welcome to another brand new episode of the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. I am the show's front man and main host, the Reverend Godfather, and this is take two. And the reason why I say take two is because last night I recorded this episode front to back. It was about an hour long, which is great, but new information came out. That's right. Last night I didn't have results in and all that, so I want to tell them to you. That way everything's somewhat accurate and everything else. And to start off with, we are starting out with a little bit of a Marvel-centric sort of thing. But it's not what you think, folks. Please sit down, sit tight. It's not drama, it's not ranting, it's not raving, but it's kind of delivering you all some news, because I'm sure some of you who listen to this are not part of our Facebook feed. So if you're not, please go to facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast and click that like button, and I tend to post some news and photos up there. So, that being said, the reason why I say that is because we got some Disney news to come in, that has come in, I should say. And that being is, the first piece is regards to, no, not seeing Thor Ragnarok. We'll get to that in a moment. And let's see. It is kind of Disney pulling a lot, not so much pulling, we've discussed Disney pulling its, a lot of its streaming stuff, movies from Netflix, to, in regards to them developing their own streaming service. And what Disney has stated is that, says Marvel TV cannot issue, no longer lease new properties, to companies not owned by Disney. After reading the article, it doesn't say anything how it affects the Netflix deal in regards to any new seasons in, of Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and The Defenders. Personally, I don't think there will be any new seasons of The Defenders because of how poorly it was received by a lot of people, and the same thing with Iron Fist. I think all in all, I say this right now because The Punisher is not out yet, and I think a lot of people are excited about it and how it looks and how it might be and how strong it might be in regards to as a show. But as of right now, with what Marvel shows that are on Netflix, in my opinion, the rankings are Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and Defenders, with Defenders being the poorest and Daredevil being the strongest. Now, like I said, with this deal, I don't know. The article did not mention any legalese in regards to Disney and Netflix. Just that I guess right now Disney is halting any extended leasing out of properties, which is, and upon itself, is a good, I won't say a good thing. I think they're limiting that in regards to this upcoming streaming service. But how it also applies, what we did get word about is, as well as like a few days later, is was an article from comicbook.com. Now, please don't please forgive me for using them as a source, but they talked about with Mark Millar in regards to Netflix buying Millarworld. Now, Mark Millar has done the comic book run of Kick-Ass, and there were three runs, three series of Kick-Ass. We only saw the original Kick-Ass in theaters and Kick-Ass 2, whereas the original movie dealt with book 1 or the graphic novel first run of the series. The second one dealt with the second run or second graphic novel, and since everything kind of fell through with the movie and not so much bad press, but a lot of people talking bad about it that worked on the film. Jim Carrey! Jim Carrey! damn these allergies and winter cold. Because of that, we never saw a Kick-Ass 3. And it, with the bad press, you know, the movie didn't do too well. So therefore, we didn't get, you know, any 3, Kick-Ass 3, and I think a lot of people that starred in it, the main cast, I'm not talking about Jim Carrey, I'm talking about everybody else, not really enthused about wanting to do a third movie, especially at this point. But Netflix has purchased Millerworld in regards to his works, but with the coming of light of the Disney saying no more leasing, I don't know, personally, I don't know how it's going to affect this deal with Mark Millar. The reason why I say that is because Millerworld, I think, is strictly put out by Marvel, because that's where the Kick-Ass series was put out, was through Marvel. So we'll see how things fall in the upcoming months and weeks and months in regards to that. I would love to see a Kick-Ass series, like the movie rebooted as a series. That way they could cover all three graphic novels in, like, season one is book one, season two is book two, season three is book three. Kind of like how Dusk to Dawn was, the original Dusk to Dawn was made from a movie into a, I think, a 3 to 5 season show on what's-his-name's network, and it came on to Netflix for the last and final season. That would be perfect, you know. It's I would love to see that. They could reboot it and put it on Netflix. But that depends on who owns the Kick-Ass series, because it was not technically it was a Marvel movie, but it wasn't technically a Marvel movie. Yes, I'm using air quotes on an audible audio program. But it should be interesting to see how this works out in regards to the whole Marvel deal and that sort of thing. And kind of speaking of Disney, and that's why I was saying that this is not, it's a Marvel story, but it's not a Disney story, not a Marvel story, but while being a Marvel story, and to kind of talk about Disney a little bit more. Many times on this program, I've spoken to you guys, or at least told you guys, of how the theater movie companies like Disney, Warner Brothers, and MGM get their funds, and what goes on, a little bit of what goes on behind the scenes when it comes to how movies are determined as success or not in regards to box office gross. I say that to kind of set up the next article that was brought to my attention, is that a lot of theaters might be boycotting the new Star Wars movie coming out December 15th, Star Wars The Last Jedi. Side note, I think the latest trailer when I went to see Thor Ragnarok last night. It was awesome. I am still awfully stoked to see it. I want to see if I could set, like, $20 aside and see it first night, Thursday night, December 14th or something like that, you know, and hopefully I'll go see it. Either way, I'll be seeing it on the 15th, so, but what they're talking about is what Disney has done. Wow. Basically, the deal that Disney has made with theaters in regarding to at least Star Wars. They didn't say anything in regards to other Disney movies like Thor or any other movies that are released by Disney. They're just talking about Star Wars and that particular deal. So I do not know if this applies to all Disney movies, but what the deal is with Disney, and to backtrack, when I tell you guys about when a movie is doing well, not doing well, is that I use the standard 50% across the board, which means if a movie does first week, and we'll go into Thor Ragnarok's weekend box office numbers in a moment, but if a movie does $100 million, in the first weekend, to get a, or let's say, $300 million in its total life. The easiest math to do is cut it in half, and that's what generally the studio will make, and the rest goes to the theaters in various percentages, meaning it depends on the studio, it depends on the theater. Some, you know, a bigger theater could get a lower percentage, while a smaller theater would be a higher percentage, meaning a Regal can negotiate that they would have to pay out of a $10 ticket, they would have to pay the studio 40% and they keep 60%, whereas a smaller theater like Berkeley Theaters here in Martinsburg, West Virginia, it could be the reverse where the theater keeps 40% and they have to send 60% to the studio. So it all depends on studio and how everything's worked out and the distributor and a whole mess of legalese. But the article that came out said that Disney's condition is that, let's see here, where are the numbers? Disney is requiring 65% of the revenue from ticket sales from theaters, up from 64% for Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. They're also requiring theaters to play the film in their largest auditorium for at least 4 weeks, while other Disney movies are typically in that space for 2 weeks. But if a theater were to break any part of their agreement, that increase would jump 5 points for a whopping 70%. That means a theater agrees to air their film on 8 screens for the first... They're just broadening the thing. It says, that means if a theater agrees to air the film on 8 screens for the first 4 weeks, but drops one of them before that time because tickets aren't selling to justify it, they will be penalized. The report states that studios generally get about 55 to 60% of revenue from domestic screenings and about 40% overseas. But that's the thing. It's 50% is a base number. It's easy, makes things easier to relate to you and to do math quickly in the head. But what they're talking about is, again, it depends on the theater, as stated. It being 8 screens is not really going to happen in a lot of theaters, but in theaters that are more than 10 screens, that might happen. But first night, I know the major chain theater near me will, depending on the popularity, I know when one of the Harry Potter movies came out earlier this century, they for the first night, they had every theater Harry Potter for that first night screening, so all the people could be able to see it. But something like that will not affect that 5-point bump. But what they're talking about in regards to the, it's more so the smaller theaters that this will hit the hardest, because they have to, if they see, if they have a whole mess of movies like Thor Ragnarok will be out by the time Star Wars hits, Justice League I think comes out on the 17th, so therefore they will have, a lot of theaters will have these two movies that will be juggernauts hitting up until Christmas, so they want to make all this money and bring in all the people up until Star Wars hits. And if these movies are still bringing in hundreds upon hundreds of people, they don't want to let these Thor Ragnarok go from the theaters and Justice League go from the theaters, and especially with Star Wars coming in. They want that. But if by chance you have a bigger movie coming in, let's say, I think, let's see what's coming out in December. I think the new Fantastic Beast is coming out in November too. So, but don't quote me on it, but let's use it for example. The new Fantastic Beast comes out closer to the end of the month, and that theater, that particular small theater, they're still seeing a large number of people going to see Thor Ragnarok, going to see Justice League, and they have the two screens for Star Wars. And here comes, you know, all the screens are full, or they're forced to have it. You know, they have to drop one, but the sales for the Star Wars is still up. Yeah, they're going to drop Justice League or Thor, but if they have a full set with Star Wars on two or three screens, and right at that point when Fantastic Beasts comes out, and every movie is doing well, but they can't justify having Star Wars on three screens, they're going to get hit really hard. A Regal or an Alamo Drafthouse is not going to really care that much because it might not affect them financially in the pocketbook too much because they're charging $10 a ticket. They're overcharging you an arm and a leg. They're literally taking an arm and a leg in your firstborn child, and you know, in regards to the soft drink and the popcorn and the snacks. But where this really hits home is the two-screen mom-and-pop theaters where they're kind of like, hey, you have to have this on two screens. And all of a sudden, Fantastic Beasts comes out, and they're like, wait a minute, we can get even more money, you know, even though this is Star Wars is dying down a little bit, we need that second screen for Fantastic Beasts. Now they're getting hit from 65% to 70%, they will see more of an effect on their pocketbook than a Regal or an Alamo Draft House. But I want to hear your thoughts on it. Does it seem like Disney is being a little bit of a mafioso strong arming the smaller theaters where you could walk in like Berkeley Theaters. I'm kind of hyping them up a little bit. It's not sponsored content. Where you could go in, see a matinee for $5, and you could walk in with $20, see a matinee for $5, and still have enough left over for popcorn, drink, and maybe nachos. And walk away with change still. And I've done that. And, you know, that might cause them to raise their rates. A place like Berkeley Theater to raise their rates even more, which will drive a lot of local their customers who've been going there for years away. So, that's that. Which, I want to say, let's work our way down through the Marvel line and talk about Thor Ragnarok. I did see it last night in theaters, in Berkeley Theater. I wandered up to see the next to last showing. It was an 8 o'clock showing. And one of the things that I don't know if Regal was doing it, but I do know Berkeley Theaters was doing it because they tend to hype things, a lot of stuff up. That's what I like about that. If our Regal Theater in town is doing any type of fundraiser or anything, you know, kid related, you don't really know it unless you're going in, but it's a lot, but a lot of people tend to go to Regal anyway, so they tend to know about it, so it's kind of like that double-edged sword in regards to Regal and a local theater like Berkeley, because not many people might go to the Berkeley Theater, so a place like Regal might say, hey, we don't really have to do that much advertising, that we're going to give like dollar movies during the summer, or dollar Christmas movies during the winter, or special promo boxes and cups and stuff for our thing, because people are going to come in anyway, yay, or we're doing a charity fundraiser where you could buy actual movie posters that we have a shit ton in stock, yay, whereas Berkeley Theater, I'm not saying they don't get their fair share of lines and crowds and packed theaters and all that, but they're the ones that tend to go, hey, we got a whole we're doing a charity thing where we'll be selling all a bunch of our posters, and they're the ones that really are shouting to the wind and shouting to the crowd that we're doing stuff too. You got to give them $1. We're doing it for free, and we got better movies. That sort of thing. But what they did for Thor Ragnarok is for $16, yes, I shelled out $16 for a bunch of plastic. What are the odds? But what you got was a Hulk fist. Now, this is a not a big bucket, but it kind of reminds you of that. If you guys guys and gals out there, remember the Hulk Smashing Hulk gloves you could buy at Walmart or Target? It kind of reminds you of like one of those, but it's a bowl, and they serve popcorn in this, so it's like a medium popcorn container. But it's not like a bucket with a Hulk's fist printed around it. But this is actually like a mold of Hulk's hand with a top cut out, so it has, you can put popcorn or candy in there. I want to eat M&M's out of this so damn bad, it's disgusting. But I should post a picture of it on our Facebook and Instagram so you guys and gals know what it looks like. And one of the things they also gave out, part of this combo meal, is a hammer. It's kind of a equivalent of a, if it was kind of expanded out, it might be like a super gulp type size cup, but it looks like a hammer that, and it is the hammer that Hulk uses in the movie, but it came with the Hulk hand cup, so it kind of works with the movie, and it also came, your choice of drink, the popcorn, the drink, and any candy in the case. So if you wanted like the $5 candy, I think the highest that Berkeley sells that candy is like $3.50. So if you wanted the $3.50 candy, you could have gotten like the $3.50 candy. So $16 for, in essence, a very large drink, the popcorn and candy. So there's that. And what is this Ragnarok is not so much one movie, it's two movies. And that two movies is Planet Hulk, and it is Thor Ragnarok. I'm not familiar with the aspect of Thor Ragnarok, but I am familiar with Planet Hulk, because I read that series, and I read both the graphic novel of the series and World War Hulk, and both are great runs. So, if you do want to read Thor Ragnarok, or Planet Hulk, or World War Hulk, I suggest picking up the graphic novel at your local comic book shop, or a bookshop wherever the graphic novels are sold by you. So, it was a very humorous movie, and there was a lot of Easter eggs that I missed out on that were pointed out to me that I didn't really catch because everything was, I won't say moving quickly. That's a good thing about this pace, that there were a lot of points that did slow down a little bit, but it was very decent pacing in it, and there was almost humor. It was Ant-Man quality humor in regards to that. I know a lot of people were disappointed about this, but what can I say? This was a very amusing movie, a very fun movie. The action was constant and very fulfilling. There were nods in the battle sequence in regards to Thor versus Hulk that were a nod back to Avengers. Loki did his job well. The only gripe that I had so much, in a way, is that Jeff Goldblum's character is that he seemed a little, even though he was Jeff Goldblum, so his character's going to be Jeff Goldblum-y, but it just didn't fit well with the the story. Close that out. But the only other thing is, yeah, I noticed in this, I don't think anybody else noticed in it, was with Odin, Anthony Hopkins, who did a wonderful job being Odin. I have mad respect for this man. I am not knocking Odin at all, or Anthony Hopkins. Just that a lot of close-ups that I, when they showed Anthony Hopkins, or Odin, if you will, looking off to the distance, and it was a side profile, you saw what looked like a hearing aid. It wasn't in his, the hearing aid wasn't in his ear, but you kind of saw like a squiggly thing in his, right above his ear. It looked like a hearing implant that he might have, I think due to his age. I don't remember him, seeing reports of him getting, such a device. If you guys or gals went to see this movie and you noticed it too, or if you go back and see it, let me know if you spot it as well. It's kind of like either on the top part of his ear or right behind it. Once you see it, you can't unsee it, and your eye just goes right to it. It doesn't take anything away from his performance, but it just pops out at you. It just doesn't fit with everything that the character might have, and they should have, the props department or the makeup department should have covered it up more, so it was more hidden. Or it's, at times it seems like they tried to do that and it just didn't work. But that doesn't take anything away from Anthony Hopkins or his role at all. And it just moves. The person who played the Goddess of Death was perfect. Keith Urban's character was, that's the thing about Keith Urban. He's a very good actor. He either is one or two things in regards to the roles that he plays. They seem either totally awesome, like Judge Dredd and Bones and his role in Almost Human on Fox. That awesome, great roles. And you have some of these roles that he's plays that's kind of like, the fuck, this is a great role, you could have played it a little bit better, and this was just one of those cheesy, dumb roles that didn't really, I don't think, fit Carl Urban at all. That's it, but he did try his best, I'll say that. He just played that bumbling sidekick, or that bumbling minion in the movie, and that's, I think, what I want to say in regards to this character, that I didn't impress me. Did I go on about Jeff? Yeah, Jeff Goldblum. The character that Jeff Goldblum replaces in the Planet Hulk storyline is way different, whereas Jeff Goldblum's character is more or less the King of Games. Not Yu-Gi-Oh! Type of King Games, but he's kind of like this big promoter of these fights, while in the Planet Hulk book, graphic novel, or comics, it was more of a warrior, dictator, emperor, you know, that will step up to a fight, whereas Jeff Goldblum was a leader, but he was more of a partier, a frat boy, just, you know, this weak, you know, Jeff Goldblum gloomy character. I guess they just wanted the movie to be a little bit more lighter, because in regards to some things, because that's how Marvel overall does. As an overall score, I want to say that it's at least a hard 7.5 to a hard 8. But like I said, there's a lot of humor in here. One of the bigger complaints I heard leading up to this movie is that Hulk is talking. Most of the people that are complaining about Hulk talking and being more lucid with his speech is because I don't think they're truly knowledgeable about Hulk as a comic book character. They're not used to Hulk saying such dialogue, or a lot of dialogue, meaning that if you want to put it in age-wise, and when we first mostly seen Hulk, it's mostly Hulk Smash. Kind of like a child just learning to talk. Hulk is just savage. He's just spouting one or two words, like, you know, Hulk Smash, Hulk Hungry, Hulk, you know, Go Away. You know, he's that type of, you know, two words, very, he has maybe the vocabulary limit of a, like, maybe a three-year-old. He could say some words, but not a whole lot. He can't form a decent sentence. And right in this movie, Thor Ragnarok, he's more along the lines of a 5 or 6 year old, where it's more of a sentence structure. You're getting more of a child, younger child influence in the sentence structure. Whereas in the book, the Hulk is more or less in his speech like a young adult or an adult, meaning that he's very intelligent with his speech. He has almost full access to Banner's mind in reference to how to say certain things, and he's not like Banner bad man. He'll say, "I don't like being Banner. Banner is no longer a part of me." And this is like, Banner's fool is a fool. I don't like Banner. So he's more or less like a young child, maybe at most a 5 or 6 year old. I do recommend seeing this movie in the theaters. It's not a rental. I do recommend you picking up it as a rental, so you're able to see more of the Easter eggs and other stuff that might be part of it. It has that Ant-Man quality of humor to it. So, and Chris Hemsworth and the person who plays Loki are, you know, just back and forth with each other. It's that perfect role for them. Doctor Strange does make an appearance in this. Remember, this is, I think, about a year after Doctor Strange, and it's about 2 years after Age of Ultron in the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe. So, there are a lot of nods that you won't get unless you know Thor. If you don't know too much about Thor lore, I'm sure there's a plethora of geeks out there that will be able to, not me, because I haven't read Thor that much, that will be happy to let you know about that. And there's a plethora of YouTube videos out there that will be more than happy to explain some of the Easter eggs and the Thor lore about Thor. And speaking of what it did in the box office, allow me to share you, because the numbers did come out, and remember, these are not the final numbers. These are the, let's see here, there it is. These are the, just for this week. I'm expecting it to probably hit 300,000, not 300,000, 300 million, if not more than that, domestically about 300 million. Thor definitely took the top spot by earning $121 million and change. And that change is like $5,000, so it's still $121 million. The second movie to come in this weekend was A Bad Mom's Christmas at $17 million. I was kind of predicting that the 2 and 3 spot would be Jigsaw and Tyler Perry's Boo 2, but it looks like I was wrong, and it was Thor and Bad Mom's Christmas. I guess because Christmas is coming up soon, that's why. But please keep in mind that the budget for Thor, this is not the advertising budget, this is just the production budget for Thor, was a $180 million. So, at top most for Thor, we're looking at something close to $300 million, or at least $400 million. So, if this movie makes past $800 million, we will see probably a... I don't know if we'll get a Thor 4, though. But you might see another sequel. I don't know. But who knows? Marvel will be kicking out these movies left and right, hand over fist. There is other news about Thor Ragnarok that came out. It's cringeworthy news, and I wanted to separate myself from last week's episode because that's how it comes out as, and it's something that I'll be bitching and complaining about in regards to last week, so I'm not going to complain about that or go back there for any that type of thing. That being said, let's move on to something a little bit, another type of review, and that is Stranger Things 2 came out this past week, or should I say last week. It's been out for about a week. I did get a chance to see it. I finished it. It was only about 9 episodes. It was a very good season. I enjoyed every minute of it, and I will say this, it has, if you like something with lots and lots of Easter eggs, even hidden ones, even though Marvel tends to put, and DC tend to put a lot of Easter eggs in their movies for the fans and for the comic book fans and nods to previous movies, what Stranger Things tends to do, the guys who put on this show, they put in, I mean, there are references to everything, and it's disgusting. But this season had a... I'll agree with most people by saying that this season had somewhat of a slow start. It's still watchable. You have to deal with it because they're introducing two new characters, and that is Max and her older stepbrother, who is a real asshole. a motherfucking asshole. To put it lightly. And... let's see here. I don't have it up. Bastard. I'm not going to pull it up. But they kind of were introducing Bobby, which is Sean Astin's character. Max, which is the new gal on the show. Teenager in the show. So they had to, plus a few other characters, and they had to kind of give a backstory of what happened between, because this season takes place about a year after the first season, so they had to kind of fill in what went on a little bit between last season to now, and that's why it felt slow. Plus you have Maxine, she goes by Max in the show, so they had to fill in that, so it's very slow. But you saw where in season one, where you saw more so of a Ellie and Mike in the forefront, along with Jonathan and Will. Will is the central kind of the character in the film, whereas Jonathan was more in the forefront, being the big older brother. In this season, he's kind of the whiny little bitch. Mike seems a little bit kind of the jealous type because everybody's still kind of focusing on Will with his kind of traumatic experience, what he went through. But this season mostly focuses on the characters Dustin and Lucas. Now, this is a good thing because it doesn't focus on the same people as last one, which would have probably turned off people. It focused more so on Lucas and Dustin and their kind of a love triangle with Max, which was perfect for this. But, yes, it seemed to slow down in a few things. And you had Sean. Oh, the jock Sean. I'm not saying that like I swing that way, but he's the kind of guy. He was more of a babysitter. I want to agree with that. He was more of a babysitter than Jonathan ever would. Where was Jonathan in this? He was with Nancy this whole time, kind of being the whiny little, I want Nancy this time. And it's just that Nancy didn't want, it was like one of those sideline plot points where we saw Nancy and Sean hook up last season, this season, that relationship is strained, and they kind of separate, and she kind of moved closer to Jonathan, the whiny little bitch who right now, and from what I've been hearing, I think he's the one that got arrested recently on cocaine charges at an airport. Don't quote me on it, but there was, like I said, two new characters. Three. You had, let's see, where is it? It was not him. Not him. Paul Reiser played a scientist. If you don't know who he is, watch the classic movie Aliens. He was in it. So I was kind of hoping for an Aliens reference somewhere in this, and there wasn't anyone in it. I was like, oh, I want an Aliens reference. But it came out 2 years later. God damn it. But, the other character, like I said, Sean Astin's character was, he played Bobby, who in the high school, his high school days was Bobby the Brain. He was called the Brain because he was such a nerd during that time. So my inner geek was that, or my question was them calling him Bobby the Brain also a nod to Bobby the Brain Heenan, manager of, you know, he was a, like a wrestler and a manager in the WWE/F, the 80s days of when WWE was WWF. So, that if that is so, it's a great little Easter egg, a great little nod to that. And one of the things I was expecting, because it came out the same year that this season takes place, 1984, especially since it was Sean Astin being a part of it, I was expecting a couple of if they were direct references to the Goonies, I would have just shit myself with the everything else. But there wasn't. But there were subtle, I think, one or two subtle references in regards to Goonies and Sean Astin. I think one was him fiddling with the map and a lot of the dealings with maps in the show and puzzles and solving little puzzles to get things moving. And the other thing was he makes reference to, this looks like an X right where a pirate would put buried treasure. And it was like the writer saying, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, Goonies reference right here. It was perfect. Everything kind of fit and flowed smoothly. There was a little hiccup in the show that I'm going to side with the writers and the showrunners in regards to this. And it was one of the main focal points of controversy. Not over like, oh my God, it's, you know, there are people doing this, like Wonder Woman or, other shows and all that, or movies that had a whole bunch of controversy and bullshit behind it. This was a lot of outrage, and the hookup was episode 7 of Stranger Things Season 2, and because it focused strictly on Ellie, or 11 for most people. And because she went out to find her, she realized that her mother was still alive, and she went out. This episode was pretty much her finding her mother and finding more about her backstory. And her finding out, spoilers, finding out that she has a sister in arms, not a biological sister, but a sister in arms, meaning that there was another girl in the facility where she was at that was older, and so 11 goes to find this girl, and it's her, her little journey into this, and it's more so, I think the episode was more so losing her own innocence in regards to the thing, because in the first season and the bulk of this season, she was very sheltered and innocent. And this was part of that, bringing her more so out of that innocence. Not making her evil, but bringing her out of her own shell and learning a little bit more. And plus, this episode, it didn't come up, but this episode felt like a backdoor pilot. And let me explain that. When it comes to pilots, take something like Star Trek. They will have a pilot. It will be nothing like, for a lot of things, the original Star Trek pilot did not look like the main series that we know and love. That's the point of a pilot. Now, when you pick up a DVD, sometimes that pilot's not referenced as a pilot. It's listed as Season 1, Episode 1. Sometimes on some DVDs, depending on the variant of the DVD or who's publishing it or who put together the DVD, sometimes it's referenced as a pilot, other times it's referenced as Season 1, Episode 1, and depending on the episode, how they number it, it could be Episode 1, Season 1, Episode 1, and 2. It's very confusing. It's, you know, that's how most pilots are. And it's usually the first episode of the season sometimes. Nowadays, the pilot episode is the first episode of any season, no matter the length. Sometimes it's Season 1, Episode 1 and 2. But that's beside the point. That's semantics. Other times, when it comes to a show or an independent program that's put out on TV, on a network, whether it be AMC, TNT, USA, CBS, ABC, Fox, whatever, that pilot might be done during an off season, meaning like spring break season or the summer season, where it's mostly reruns, and they just want to test to see how it is. They'll just put it up, and that's the pilot. If it gets a lot of ratings, they'll buy the rest of the show, and that remaining episodes will be different. Different case in point. It's listed as episode one, Season 1, Episode 1, but it was a pilot. That's Babylon 5. There were a lot of characters that and things in that episode that were different as the season went on, because finances, better people came in for cheaper, or the people writing it didn't like how things happened, therefore some things were dropped and other things were put, you know, into play. Whereas, like, the character Delenn, J. Michael Straczynski thought instead of having Delenn look more masculine, male-like, it would be better off if Delenn looked more, the person who played Delenn actually looked more like herself instead of more of a male feature-esque for her character. So that was changed. And, you know, these are just minor things that could be changed that they don't want to deal with later on in the show. So that's a direct pilot. A backdoor pilot is something that they do a one-off of in the season. If it gets a lot of buzz or if it's aired on a network station like AMC or CBS and it gets a lot of ratings, they continue with that that spin-off. Case in point, NCIS New Orleans. It started out as a backdoor pilot in NCIS. And pretty much it's like, okay, let's check in with this is happening in New Orleans, let's check in with our New Orleans office. And the ratings for those particular episodes were high enough to justify branching off to having an NCIS New Orleans. So that's a backdoor pilot. It's having a pilot without actually having a pilot. So that's what this felt like, a backdoor pilot. Like they were testing a different take on a Stranger Things, where the one would be more Chicago city-based, and where you could have the normal Stranger Things going on. It was a very good episode. Let me talk about Sean Astin's Bobby character some more. Bobby's character was a very mysterious thing because character. You were rooting for him, but you weren't rooting for him. Sean, like I said, you kind of thought Bob was a plant, but it turned out he wasn't, which is a good thing. He played Sean always sells his character well. It was kind of, I'm not going to say anymore for those who haven't seen it yet. Sean Astin's Bob character was a very good character. If he does show up at one of the local cons I go to, I'll talk to him about that. Like I said, this was a very Dustin and Lucas heavy season, and it was done well, and combined with the jock, Sean, who was the way better person, elder person in this, instead of Justin, kind of, whereas Jonathan was kind of the bigger brother in last season and stepped forward a lot, he stepped way back, and it was and this time around, it was Sean's time to shine. And Sean had the best line in. Watch, I've been saying Sean all time wrong. It was different type of thing. One of the things that Sean, yeah, right. I'm thinking Sean, and it's Steve. oh wow, I'm not going to record 51 minutes worth of content because of a name change. Steve, not Sean. Yeah, I'm going to get flack for that. Steve, he gave the best line in the show, which was, what are you two kids, this is directed towards Dustin and Lucas, what are you two guys doing just yapping off while this random girl is helping me? And it's just, he steps up so much, and I think I've been saying Sean a lot because Sean Astin, and how I met Sean Astin, side note, before we move on, I met Sean Astin a little, like, 2-3 years ago. Yeah, it was about 2 years ago at AwesomeCon. He was the nicest guy you could meet. He came in later than everybody else, and he was, like, it was like you couldn't be mad at the guy. Literally, you couldn't be mad at this guy, because he was like, dude, I'm so, he was very apologetic. He's like, listen, I had a whole mess of media events I had to get to and get through to promote AwesomeCon and what I'm doing, and he said, I'm sorry, I had, as much as I wanted to rush through him, I couldn't rush through him. But I'm here now, come on down, let's, you know, say a hi. He all smiles, apologizes, like, I want to be mad at you for being late, and you just, but he was cool and nice and everything else. Hope I get to see him again. The Ellie and Mike situation. Yeah, Mike was still the whiny little bitch that he is, because again, he has to be like that center of attention, but and Ellie, she had a great thing with Hopper, kind of being that, kind of, her trying to be a daughter for once, an actual, girl, and trying to stretch her legs in a way, and her individuality, and him Hopper trying to be a dad again, because there is that backstory that he was a dad, and his daughter, his biological daughter was, lost to cancer. This is in season one. And I'm not really spoiling anything with season one by saying that. So, there's that. Nancy has her own little story arc. It's just very convoluted and just slows everything down a tad. Another little bit of controversy, I think we mentioned it on the show, in regards to Stranger Things 2, was, again, in the first few episodes, you see the Gang of Four, or Gang of Five, all each wearing, you know, Ghostbuster uniforms. And the major controversy was that they're not accurate. How could they build such things back in 1984? Why? Oh, the geekdom, how dare they? But one of the people that are in the local Ghostbuster groups came out and said that for 1984, what these guys are wearing, what they put together for a replica pack is 1984 accurate, both the uniform and the pack with what they did. So sit down and shut up. And to kind of give out what these Ghostbuster groups, local Ghostbuster groups do, and sorry I tapped the mic right there, is that they're kind of like what the 501st does, is that the 501st come out to a lot of, they do a lot of charity work, sort of the Ghostbusters groups. Basically, whereas you have a lot of kids right now that are Ghostbusters fans, and they might not want Star Wars, they want Ghostbusters to show up to their, you know, as a Make-A-Wish thing, so that's what these members of Ghostbusters group do. They make their own traps and their own packs and their own suits, and they go and they make kids smile, and they have fun. So what's the harm in that? Same like with the 501st and the league, the groups that support around the 501st. If you're making kids smile, how bad can you be? But to kind of move on from that, to kind of jump over to DC, the reason why I said it is that with Legends of Tomorrow, one of the current episodes that came out takes place in 1984, 1985. And after seeing Stranger Things Season 2 taking place in 1984, a lot of what they did in Legends of Tomorrow seemed almost carbon copy of what happens in Stranger Things Season 2. And, I mean, it's like, oh dear God, an evil corporation. Oh dear God. Oh, this, it's like, oh, like they got their hands on Stranger Things 2 script, or the synopsis of Stranger Things 2, and quickly did an episode to kind of mimic it, and it came out within the same time frame of Stranger Things to kind of carry on that wave. It was a fun little episode. It's just like, really? Really, you're copying Stranger Things? Somebody got the script, or knew somebody, or somebody who worked on this episode, writing this episode, knew a couple of people who wrote Stranger Things, and this is what they kind of doing for it? Oh, dear God. Oh, it's also a Halloween type of thing. Oh, God! It was almost that kind of inducing rage. It's like, oh, dear God, they can't. Oh, no, 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 they're. Oh. But that being said, what can I say about that? That's it. It just seemed like a very big, mimicky episode. Next up, I want to speak out a little bit. I think I forgot about it in the first take of this recording, and that was the whole aspect of The Flash. I think I mentioned that I want to talk about The Flash, but I forgot what I was going to say. But I remembered over the next 24 hours, oh yeah, that's what I wanted to say. Son of a bitch. And that was Danny Trejo showed up for The Flash. And Danny Trejo is one of the cool, got to be one of the coolest motherfuckers out there. And just, he portrays himself as always this tough guy and someone you wouldn't want to pick a fight. But he's one of the busiest guys out there that always is working and always seems to play this tough guy role. And I so much want to meet this man. It's disgusting. I will want to have a beer with this guy. You know, I'll take any ribbing this guy has to offer. And, you know, because he comes off that way as one hell of a cool dude and nice dude, the role fit him well. And you do find out the name, Gypsy's actual name. And it is an S name. I think she said her name was like Serena. And all I could think when she said her name, it was an S name. It wasn't like Sarah or something like that. It was, I think, closer to Serena. Was the fact that, yes, S name. There goes another little notch in my tinfoil hat theory that she is, in essence, her Earth's equivalent of Cisco. But we'll never know. But hopefully we do come to find out about that. Nothing too much more about that particular episode, other than we did get a glimpse of a new superhero as part of the Flash series, or possible superhero, and that is the Elongated Man. Basically, someone who could be really stretchy. Kind of like Mr. Fantastic in the Fantastic Four, but a little bit more cornier. So, how things might turn. We're also hearing things that Tom Welling will, aka Smallville, the CW show Smallville, Superman will be showing up as a parallel Superman, which I will believe when I see, because there have been some interviews where Tom Welling has said yes, he'll do it, and there have been, like, for every one of that saying yes, he wouldn't mind showing up, there has been, like, three or four articles saying that no, he won't show up, and him saying no, he won't show up, and how he kind of was the person who brought down Smallville, and how happy he was for doing it. So, I'll believe it when I see it. What else can I say? I did see Voltron on Netflix, the season 4, that's out, is season 4. It just was very short. Let me just comment about that. The reason why I say it's short and didn't, like, feel like a season, I don't know if I covered season 3, but it felt like it didn't feel like a season 4. It felt like a continuation of season 3, because I think season 1 and 2 were both about 12 episodes a piece. Season 3 was 6, and season 3 was 6, season 4 was 6. So that's why they both kind of felt odd. And not to mention, I think season 3 came out in September and season 4 came out in October, and I'm just now got around to watching season 4 of Voltron, and you had a better, this was better than season 3, this is getting a, maybe a 7 out of 10, I am now officially 2 seasons ahead of Sasha, and I would have been happy to discuss a few things about what went on in season 3 with season 3 and season 4 in regards to, character Pip, not Pip. Why am I keep saying Pip? I know it's not Pip. How dare I say Pip? Let's see here. 1-0-L-T. There we go. Watch. Pidge. Close enough. I'm tired. I need to get some sleep. So, I'm going to close it up by saying this. It was a good season, and kind of seeing the writers again acknowledging Pidge and kind of what she went through and what she's kind of doing and who she is and what she has to do and what she's been doing is good, and it's a great season, and it's great everything else for that. I hope we see a season 5 in regards to that, and I hope it's more than 12 episodes, I should say more than 6. I'm going to give that a 6 out of 10. Stranger Things is going to get a 8 out of 10. And yes, word is already out. We are getting a season 3 of Stranger Things, and it should be, from what word has it, please do not quote me on it, this is only speculation, because nothing's really set in stone until we get actual word, probably San Diego Comic-Con next year, in reference to more details about Season 3 of Stranger Things, but from what I heard, it's going to take, instead of a year later from Season 2, it might be 2 years later, or 3 years later, and we'll see about that. That should be about it. So I want to just say this: if you want to hear previous episodes of our podcast, you can go all the way back through our archives and see everything about our show by going to our main website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. And yes, please include the word "the" in that website address. We're also on Apple Podcasts. If you have a Apple or say an iOS device, that is a iPhone, iPad, or iPod. Yes, they still make the an iPod. But if you have a desktop or a laptop computer, we are can be found on iTunes if you want to go that route. We are also, if you don't believe in Apple products or believe in using Apple products, we are found on Google Play Music. But if you use a Windows-based computer and don't wish to use iTunes, you could always go to our website, again, which is thelonecookmafia.podbean.com, and download our and stream our show there. You could find us once again at our Facebook page. You could like our page and stalk our show there, which is facebook.com/thelonecookmafiapodcast. If you have an opinion about anything we said tonight, you're more than happy to email us by sending an email to longcoatmafia@gmail.com or leaving a message on our Facebook page. We do have a Twitter account that we try to keep up to date and promote stuff and talk to various people, including those who do talk to us on Twitter. And that Twitter handle is Longcoat Mafia. We do post pictures of places we go and other amusing things on Instagram. And our Instagram handle is Longcoat Mafia. So you feel free to stalk us on Twitter and Instagram. So that's it. I hope to see you guys next week. Next week we should, I think I have an interview coming up with someone. So that's that. So stay tuned. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts /iTunes, Google Play Music, or follow us on any of our social media outlets so you're notified immediately when a new episode is dropped. And if you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts /iTunes and Google Play Music, you get that episode as soon as it drops. That means as soon as that I drop that episode, you are able to get it if you're a subscriber. If you're not, you might have to wait a day or two, or you'll have to go to our website, which is, again, thelonecookmafia.podbean.com. Subscribing is free. We are available on all mobile devices. So, again, take care. We're out. Hope you had a happy Halloween and happy week. Bye-bye.
See you next time on the Longcoat Mafia.